Welcome to Bina, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of Bina, our guest is U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo, a member of the Muscogee Creek Nation and the first Native American poet to hold the honor. And now, join Stephanie Singer on stage at the JCCSF as she introduces Joy Harjo.
Earlier this year, Joy Harjo was appointed the 23rd Poet Laureate of the United States. An enrolled member of the Muscogee Creek Nation of Oklahoma, she's the first Native American and first Oklahoman to serve in the position. In announcing the selection, Carla Hayden of the Library of Congress said, quote, "Joy Harjo has championed the art of poetry, soul talk, as she calls it, for over four decades. To her, poems are carriers of dreams, knowledge, and wisdom, and through them, she tells an American story of tradition and loss, reckoning, and myth-making. Her work powerfully connects us to the earth and the spiritual world with direct, inventive lyricism that helps us reimagine who we are." Joy Harjo's 9 volumes of poetry include Conflict Resolution for Holy Beings, How We Became Human, She Had Some Horses, and her latest, American Sunrise. Her 2012 memoir, Crazy Brave, won several awards, including the Penn USA Literary Award for Creative Nonfiction and the American Book Award. She is the recipient of the Ruth Lilly Prize from the Poetry Foundation for Lifetime Achievement, the 2015 Wallace Stevens Award from the Academy of American Poets, and was inducted into the Oklahoma Writers Hall of Fame in 2014. A renowned musician, Harjo performs with her saxophone nationally and internationally, solo and with her band, the Aerodynamics. She has 5 award-winning CDs of music, including the award-winning album Red Dreams and Winding Through the Milky Way. And she's currently a Tulsa Artist Fellow, and among other things, is editing a Norton anthology of Native poetry. Friends, please give a warm welcome to Joy Harjo.
It's so good to be here. Hey, Stongo. It's great to be here, and I don't get here enough in this beautiful city. And thank you for inviting me, Meadow, and for this beautiful land that we're on. It's a little shaky sometimes, but that's because there's a lot of power in it. And beauty, a lot of powerful beauty in it. So I'm going to start with this... a song taught me by my cousin, Joe Sulfur. There are many kinds of libraries, and he's one of our libraries. Not all libraries have books, but he's kind of the library of our tribal songs. And so I learned this one from him, and it's called Ale Nale No, and it basically means it's a welcoming song, and... And I've been wonderfully welcomed by you. And this is just a continuation to say, well, you know, to welcome the old ones. The old ones are welcoming us. That's why we're all here. And we should enjoy each other's company and even dance if you feel like it and have a good time. And, okay.
Thank you.
Ole nolly no, Heathly need to gully. Ole nolly no, Ole nolly no, Hobany, Hobany. Ole nolly no, Ole nolly no. Ole nolly no, Ole nolly no, Ole nolly no, Ole nolly no. Ajalugi mangongi, Ole nolly no, Ole nolly no. Hey, Yangi Goli. Ole nolly no, 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 Ole nolly no. Hey, Yangi Goli. This is called Calling the Spirit Back. We've got some strange things going on in these times. And sometimes we lose parts of ourselves as we walk along in our life story. Just like a nation is a person and can lose parts of itself as it walks along. And just like a family can lose parts of itself as it walks along due to history, trauma, and the things we do to each other. So this poem is to help call the spirit back. Put down that bag of potato chips, that white bread, that bottle of pop. Turn off that cell phone, computer, and remote control. Open the door, then close it behind you. Take a breath offered by friendly winds. They travel the earth gathering essences of plants to clean. Give it back with gratitude. If you sing, you will give your spirit lift to fly to the stars' ears and back. Acknowledge this earth who has cared for you since you were a dream planting itself precisely within your parents' desire. Let your moccasin feet take you to the encampment of the guardians who have known you before time, who will be there after time. They sit before the fire that has been there without time. Let the earth stabilize your post-colonial insecure jitters. Be respectful of the small insects, birds, and animal people who accompany you. Ask their forgiveness for the harm we humans have brought down upon them. Don't worry. The heart knows the way, though there may be high-rises, interstates, checkpoints, armed soldiers, massacres, wars, and those who will despise you because they despise themselves. The journey might take you a few hours, a day, a year, a few years, 100, 1,000, or even more. Watch your mind. Without training, it might run away and leave your heart for the immense human feast set by thieves of time. Do not hold regrets. When you find your way to the circle, to the fire kept burning by the keepers of your soul, you will be welcomed. You must clean yourself with cedar, sage, or other healing plant. Cut the ties you have to failure and shame. Let go the pain you are holding in your mind, your shoulders, your heart, all the way to your feet. Let go the pain of your ancestors to make way for those who are heading in our direction. Ask for forgiveness. Call upon the help of those who love you. Call your spirit back. It may be caught in corners and creases of shame, judgment, and human abuse. You must call in a way that your spirit will want to return. Speak to it as you would a beloved child. Welcome your spirit back from its wandering. It may return in pieces and tatters. Gather them together. They will be happy to be found after having been lost for so long. Your spirit will need to sleep after it is bathed and given clean clothes. Now you can have a party. Invite everyone you know who loves and supports you. Keep room for those who have no place else to go. Make a giveaway. And remember, keep the speeches short. Then you must do this. Help the next person find their way through the dark. So this next piece is kind of a version of a creation story, a Muskogean creation story where we emerged. Probably we keep emerging from these worlds we keep destroying. This is a soprano sax. It's not a fancy clarinet. I usually play alto, but I've been taking my soprano out for some fun. I have a poem I'm not reading tonight called Rabbit Invents the Saxophone. It must have, because Rabbit's trickster, and you know a saxophone can be a trickster instrument. It's called Once the World is Perfect. Once the world is perfect, and we were happy in this world, then we took it for granted. Discontent began a small rumble in the earthly mind. Then doubt pushed through with its spiked head. And once doubt ruptured the web, all manner of demon thoughts jumped through. We destroyed the world we had been given for inspiration, for life. Each stone of jealousy, each stone of fear, greed, envy, jealousy put out the light. No one was without a stone in his or her hand. There we were, right back where we had started. We were bumping into each other in the dark, and now we had no place to live because we didn't know how to live with each other. Then one of the stumbling ones took pity on another and shared a blanket. A spark of kindness made a light. The light made an opening in the darkness. Everyone worked together to make a ladder. A Wind Clan person climbed out first into the next world, and then the other clans, the children of those clans, their children and their children and their children, all the way through time to right now, to you. Thank you. So I was talking a little bit about the trickster rabbit in a Muscogee Creek Nation is rabbit. The trickster, our trickster is rabbit. There are a lot of them. Some of them are, I guess in some cultures it's coyote, some it's spider. And, you know, we all have clowns, tricksters, and you often find them sitting somewhere near the seat of power. Because one, you know, because they're there to remind us that any power that we have doesn't belong to us. It's given to share. And though sometimes in strange times like these, the tricksters wind up sitting in the seats of power. And then you know you're in trouble. So this is kind of along the creation story version, but it's about rabbit, again, rabbit showing up and what happened. Or should I say what's happening? In a world long before this one, there was enough for everyone until somebody got out of line. We heard it was rabbit, fooling around with clay in the wind. Everybody was tired of his tricks, and no one would play with him. And he was lonely in this world. So rabbit thought to make a person. And when he blew into the mouth that crude figure to see what would happen, the clay man stood up. Rabbit showed the clay man how to steal a chicken. The clay man obeyed. Then he showed him how to steal corn. The clay man obeyed. Then he showed him how to steal someone else's wife, and that clay man obeyed. Rabbit felt important and powerful, and clay man felt important and powerful, and once that clay man started, he could not stop. Once he took that chicken, he wanted all the chickens. Once he took that corn, he wanted all the corn. And once he took that wife, he wanted all the wives. He was insatiable. Then he had a taste of gold. He wanted all the gold. Soon it was land or anything else he saw. His wanting only made him want more. Soon it was countries, then it was trade. The wanting infected the earth. We lost track of our stories. We could no longer see or hear our ancestors or talk with each other across the kitchen table. Forests were being mowed down all over the world to make more. And rabbit had no place left to play. Rabbit's trick had backfired. Rabbit tried to call that clay man back. But when the clay man wouldn't listen, rabbit realized he'd made a clay man with no ears. Thank you.
You're listening to U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo, whose most recent collection of poetry is An American Sunrise, on Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
So I'm a member of the Muscogee Creek Nation, Ojibwe Ceremonial Ground, or Hickory Ground, and I live in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I was born there, and then left for, in 67, I left to go to Indian boarding school. Not your usual. I was going to be sent to Shalako Indian School, and as we were leaving the BIA office, my mother said, "Well, she's a really good artist." And the agent said, well, and showed us, it gave us this flyer on the Institute of American Indian Arts, which was a new, it was in its early stages. It was a new idea in Indian school where it was an Indian arts school. And I applied with drawings and got in. And it saved my life. I was around for the first time I would really talk in school, and we had Native students from all over the country at that school, all of us in arts. And at that time, it was mostly a high school. It was a Bureau of Indian Affairs school then, and it was mostly a high school with 2 years postgraduate in all of the arts. And we had some of the best teachers in the country, Native and non-Native. And I know that school has saved a lot of our lives because, being an artist, it's a whole different kind of path. Although ultimately, because what artists do, let me back up a little bit, because what artists do, no matter what kind of art it is, you're always in this place where you're looking a little ahead. There's something there that you can't see that no one else can, and you put yourself in that place. You master your tools. You're always working and learning and training and listening. And it takes you, the spirit of the arts takes you into places. And then what you do is you bring back, whether it's paintings or sculpture or dance or music or poetry, you bring back what's needed to grow the spirit of the people, the place of earth. Humans are put here to be helpful. We are the earth. And that's what artists do. And you think of what are... and you think about... And I was lucky in my elementary school in Tulsa, we had the arts. I learned to read music, although I play a lot by ear. Anymore, I play mostly by ear. I just listen to stuff and work on it. But we learned music. We had art classes. The arts were considered an important part of the curriculum. And I think that's why I was still alive when I was 16, 15 years old. And so we need the arts. Anyway, I went to this school, and it really saved my life because suddenly there I was with people who understood what, we had similar histories, and we were young, and we knew that, and it was a certain point in the culture, in our cultures, that we were coming together, and we could feel it, and yet we were still kids, and we were human beings, and we were going through things. So this next poem is called Indian School Night Song Blues, and it's probably really a monologue. And anyway, this one is, the character in here is talking, she's on restriction, and it's a weekend, it's like a Friday or Saturday night. And so what would happen if you were put on restriction? See, there was a lot of that military terminology that was being used. And if you were on restriction, it was usually for, even though it was pretty, we had really fine artists and so on, we still had the other part of the Indian school thing so that we were not allowed to speak our languages, even then. And you could get on restriction for drinking and other things like that. And but then what would happen on, you'd have to come in right after school and then do your detail. There's another word, the detail. And then you would, on weekends, if you were on restriction, you couldn't go anywhere. You had to stay with a monitor that who would come in and check. But people who were out running around on the weekends would bring you things because they felt sorry for you. So the speaker is kind of lit. But she's looking around at all of these young, talented people, and she sees who they are and sees, often if you're bearing a great gift, with that gift becomes all of those challenges that you need to break it free. And they can be difficult. You know, we're given these challenges, we have our gifts, just like right now in history. It's a gift. One thing that really helped me at one point, because, you know, it's hard to be native, to read native history and to know the stories and the ongoing stories, is I remember someone saying or reading it that that teachers are hardest on those, most difficult on those students that are, they see the most promise in. And then I thought, whoa, the Creator must, we must be, real, natives must be real special to the Creator. And other groups of people. This is called the Indian School Night Song Blues. I called to order the meeting of girls on restriction at Indian school, locked up in the dorm. We broke the rules. Now it's Saturday night. No booze. You lose. Music courtesy of KOMA, straight from Oklahoma City, across the plain of tears and fears, over the mountains to hear the city different, Santa Fe, Indian school, hippie crash. Let's dance. Where's the dorm matron? Hide the stash. We all admire Marlene. She's one of the best. She's Jackson Pollock in a dress. She only leaves the painting studio for sleep or work, and on Sunday she sneaks out to the Indian hospital on the other side of campus. She took me once. The children clapped and laughed when she came in. She brought them gifts. All her desserts saved up for a week, crayons, paper, and tiny fans. We hid when the staff came in. They eventually threw her out. The hospital carried no insurance to cover the harm she might do. And Venus. Now that's a name and a history. One parent from the north on the back of a horse, the other from the south over the back of a river. Venus is a singer. She's a real singer. Each singer has a particular gift. Some grow plants, some call helpers, some heal the sick, some make the dead rise up and dance. And when Venus sings, we enter into a trance. We no longer hurt from freak chants. You're going to make it to Broadway, either New York or Albuquerque. Mary, Mary, quite contrary, you're as silent as a mouse in the corner of the dining hall, chewing on stale American bread. We don't know who you are. Maybe you're dead to this reality. None of us are coping well with the BIA. We've read the reports. Doesn't play well with others. Won't speak or look us in the eyes. Talks to ghosts. We know what they're really saying. We have the guns and money, and we have your children. Mary's spirit is mostly underground with clay. When she's with us, she roams the halls in precise eyeglasses, bell bottoms laced tight, and a stack of poetry in her arms. T.S. Eliot, she says, needed to put his hands in clay. Still, she reads him every day, perched with her books outside the powwow circle. Where's Kip? We can't find Kip anywhere. She's not in the laundry room practicing powwow in her underwear. She's not on the roof where she sneaks her smokes, or in that tent she made of government-issued bedspreads where she sketches high fashion of Indians in Paris. Here comes Kip with a knife. There she goes, no top or bottom, only fury, whirling in a spiritual nudity. She's headed out into the snow. She's what happens when somebody hurts the baby. We can corner our sheets so a quarter spins and know the drill for shots, debugging, and towels. We have a chance. This is a book I didn't plan to write, and it kind of timed to come out I didn't know I was going to be the U.S. Poet Laureate either, and it all kind of came together. But I took a job in Tennessee, in Knoxville, really, really nice people there. But I took it because it was our part of our homelands. That Tennessee River that came up into Knoxville, it's in one of the old roads. You know, the rivers were the old roads. And during my interview, I told them, well, you know, my great-grandfather, Manawha, used to steal horses up here. They hired me anyway. But we went all over the Southeast, and it was intense to be there because it helped me understand what we're going through right now in this country, because I realized, one, I guess the history in the South. And it was strange to go back to a homelands and none of us were there. Yet the songs were in the trees. And some of the people were still there. There were still some there taking care of things. And so this whole book was written. You know, I remember standing there and I didn't have time. It was last on a list. I was doubling up a load because I was going to leave that spring. And it worked out great because I wound up getting a Tulsa Artist Fellowship that started in January. But I didn't know that before. But, you know, my spirit told me, get to do all of this and get it done. You don't always know. You know, I've questioned my intuition and actually not done it. And I should have listened. I should have listened about that relationship, you know. I should have listened. But anyway, I remember standing there with all these students, and at that point I was the only poetry professor because one retired and the other one passed suddenly, and I was working with Jennifer Forrester, who's here, another Creek poet, Muskogee poet, and several others on this, all Native poets on this anthology of Native poetry for Norton, which will be called When the Light of the World Was Subdued, Our Songs Came Through, a Norton anthology of Native Nations poetry. And we were working on all of that, and then I'm standing there looking out into this heartbreakingly beautiful country. And my husband and I, we drove all over. He's also Muskogee Creek, the same ceremonial grounds, and we drove down. I even found a house that had belonged to one of my uncles. A lot of people think, well, Trail of Tears, they just pulled people out. The people were in rags and they were just primitive and they pulled them out, you know, and we went in and brought civilization. No, that's not what happened. That's not what happened at all. It'd be just like people walking into your houses right now and taking you out and going in. I read a lot of accounts of people just walking in and the original inhabitants just standing outside the house with no place to go. But then we went all over and it was so beautiful. The country was so beautiful, heartbreakingly beautiful. And so this poem, I looked out in the trees in my spirit and I knew we were going to leave. And that felt strange too, to come back to a place. And then here was our home. And then we're going to leave it again after they had called us back. It's a very contradictory and conflicting feeling. And then what do we artists do with those things? We make art out of it. But I was thinking, too, of how that this history, it's the same political stuff going on then with Andrew Jackson as there is now. And I think about those families at the border, a refuge in the smallest of places, and for all those fleeing on those ancient migration trails north for home. Someone sang for me and no one else could hear it when I had given up and made knife marks on my arm, or drank and gave myself away or was given. Someone sang for me and no one else could hear it when demons came with rope and cages to take my children from me and imprison us. Someone sang for me and no one else could hear it. Now I am here in this timeless room of lost poetry, gathering up the destroyed and forgotten because of the song someone sang that no one else could hear but me. Sometimes it's only a song that will keep you alive. I was writing one poem, and I don't know what I'm doing in a poem, because if I do, then it's going to ruin it for me. And one of the poems in here, I wound up in this place, and I thought, wow, I learned that how that a grandfather blew a song into his grandchildren so they would remember to come back. And I realized that was me. This is called running, because sometimes those, like I was saying early on about, we get caught in these places of abuse or and this is about one of those times. But, you know, we can make it through. The best way to make it through is to help other people make it through. It's called running. It's closing time. Violence is my boyfriend with a cross to bear. Hoisted on by the church, he wears it everywhere. There are no female deities in the Trinity. I don't know how I'm going to get out of here, said the flying fish to the tree. Last call. We've had it with history, we who look for vision here in the Indian and poetry bar, somewhere to the left of hell. Now I have to find my way when there's a river to cross and no boat to get me there, when there appears to be no home at all. My father gone, chased by the stepfather's gun. Get out of here. I've found my father at the bar, his ghost at least, some piece of him in this sorry place. The boyfriend's convincing to a crowd. Right now, he's the spell of attraction. What tales he tells in the fog of thin hope. I wonder this sad world we've made with the enemy's words. The lights quiver like they do when the power's dwindling to a dangling string. It's time to go home. We are herded like stoned cattle, like children for the bombing drill. Out the door into the dark street of this old Indian town where there are no Indians anymore. I was afraid of the dark because then I could see everything. The truth with its eyes staring back at me, the mouth of the dark with its shiny moon teeth. No words, just a hiss and a snap. I could hear my heart hurting with my in-the-dark ears. I thought I could take it. Where is the party? It's been a century since we left home with the American soldiers at our backs. The party had long started up in the parking lot. He flew through the dark, broke my stride with a punch. I went down, then came up. I thought I could take being a girl with her heart in her arms. I carried it for justice, for the rights of all Indians. We all had that cross to bear. The old ones followed me, the quiet girl with the long dark hair, the daughter of a warrior who wouldn't give up. I wasn't ready yet to fling free the cross. I ran and I ran through the 2 a.m. streets. It was my way of breaking free. I was anything but history. I was the wind.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's guest is U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo, whose most recent collection of poetry is An American Sunrise. Beena is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
This one's called Honoring. And this poem came from, I don't know, sometimes I like to look on the tags of my clothes to see where they come from. And then I like to think about, I like to say little thank yous to the people who made my clothes or the food. You know, probably all of our cultures were taught to give thanks, to bless the food or ask for a blessing. And we're happy to have food because a lot of us know what it's like, or our ancestors know what it's like not to have anything to eat. And then now, you know, with all of these, you know, these climate changes and so on, we don't know what's going to happen with our food, you know, with droughts and floods. And which reminds us we need to take care, always take care. But one thing I learned, I lived in Hawaii for a little while, and I realized that here all the bananas all have those tags of those big companies on them, and I realized there's all kinds of bananas. And it made me think different kinds, and I started thinking about who grows our food. Were the plants sung to? I know my plants do better if you care for them and treat them like, you know, they're part of the family, versus ones, you know, I wondered about that and what it's doing to us and what it's doing to us everywhere. And what happens when the food is all processed and it's made, the intent matters, and it's made only to make money. You know, even processed songs, processed stories. It's like that. Honoring. Who sings to the plants that are grown for our plates? Are they gathered lovingly in aprons or arms, or do they suffer the fate of the motor-driven whip of the monster reaper? No song at all, only the sound of money being stacked in a bank. Who stitched the seams in my clothes one line after another? Was the room sweaty and dark with no hour to spare? Did she have enough to eat? Did she have a home anywhere? Or did she live on the floor, and where were the children? Or was the seamstress the child with no home of his or her own? Who sacrifices to make clothes for strangers of another country, and why? Let's remember to thank the grower of food, the picker, the driver, the sun, and the rain. Let's remember to thank each maker of stitch and layer of pattern, the dyer of color, in the immense house of beauty and pain. Let's honor the maker. Let's honor what's made. This one is a new one. I don't know how I wrote it because it's been pretty crazy since the announcement of this poet laureateship. I talked to Tracy K. Smith, and she said she only wrote one poem. I think one or two poems during her term. But I was asked for... It was the New York Times was doing one of these things where they ask a question about why beauty, and it was one of those impossible questions to answer. But this just came out of, it just appeared. The life of beauty. The sung blessing of creation led her into the human story. That was the first beauty. Next beauty was the sound of her mother's voice, rippling the waters beneath the drumming skin of her birthing cocoon. Next beauty, the father with kindness in his hands as he held the newborn against his breathing. Next beauty, the moon through the dark window. It was a rocking horse, a wish. There were many beauties in this age, for everything was immensely itself. Green greener than the impossibility of green. The taste of wind after it slide through dew grass at dawn, or language running through a tangle of wordlessness in her mouth. She ate well of the next beauty. Next, beauty planted itself urgently beneath the warrior's shrines. Next was beauty beaded by her mother and pinned neatly to hold back her hair. Then, how tendrils of fire longing grew into her, beautiful the flower between her legs as she became herself. Do not forget this beauty, she was told. The story took her far away from beauty in the test of her living. Beauty was often long from the reach of her mind and spirit. When she forgot beauty, all was brutal. But beauty always came to lift her up to stand again. When it was beautiful all around and within, she knew herself to be cornplant, moon, and sunrise. Death is beautiful, she sang as she left this story behind her. Even her bones, said time, were tuned to beauty. I used all the words I was told in poetry workshops not to use. I just realized that. That's funny. That's a thing. I think one of the wisest things, and it sounds simple, but it's not. One of the wisest things, I've had many teachers from different cultures, and in my own family, and some teachers by terrible example, and then others who care and you know, gave a lot of information. And this one teacher, she's from New Mexico, from Isleta. And I remember her looking at me fiercely, because she was fierce and a difficult teacher sometimes. And I remember her looking at me fiercely and saying, be yourself. Be yourself. And it's really, I didn't really understand what she was saying then. But I realize now, and sometimes it's really hard to be yourself in the midst of everything. But if everybody was absolutely themselves and didn't worry about what their neighbor was doing, it would be different. I mean, the trees are being themselves. The stones are being themselves. The animals. This water. Just be yourself. So I'm going to play this one. This is an older one. It's called My House is the Red Earth. And it was a poem to say, Meadow, thank you for this beautiful land. It actually was part of a collaboration with an astronomer of all people, an astronomer, Stephen Strom, who did these incredible photographs of lands in the Southwest. And I was living there then. I mean, that I went to IAI. I went home to Oklahoma as a teenage mother and lived in Tahlequah. I had a son, a stepdaughter, and moved back. And that's where I started writing poetry. And when I was writing poetry, I was learning Navajo language. And now I'm learning, you know, I've got more of my own, but that was my poetry, that voice found nourishment there. So this is a story, this book was to give back and to say thank you to these lands, to this earth. And I've wondered what use humans are to this earth sometimes, and what is it we give? And maybe because we really are the earth, if you remember that image of NASA, you know, suddenly we were talking global. Environmental became a term, I think, that emerged probably at the same time as that image, because we could see the earth as this incredible living being. But the earth likes to be remembered. And this is called My House is the Red Earth. And I usually play it with my alto, so we'll see what happens. My house is the red earth. It could be the center of the world. I've heard New York, Paris, Tokyo called the center of the world. But I say it's magnificently humble. You could drive by and miss it. Radio waves can obscure it. Words cannot construct it. For there are some sounds left to a sacred wordless form. For instance, that fool crow near the corral understands the center of the world as greasy scraps of fat. Just ask him. He doesn't have to say that the earth has turned scarlet to fierce belief after centuries of heartbreak and laughter. Look with the mind of the swirling earth in your shiprock. You become the land beautiful and understand how three crows at the edge of the highway laughing become three crows at the edge of the world laughing. Don't bother the earth spirit who lives here. She is working on a story. It's the oldest story in the world, and it is delicate, changing. If she sees you watching, she'll invite you in for coffee, give you warm bread, and you will be obligated to stay and listen. But this is no ordinary story. You will have to endure earthquakes, lightning, the deaths of all those you love, the most blinding beauty. It's a story so compelling, you may never want to leave. This is how she traps you. See that stone finger over there? That is the only one who ever escaped. I'm going to close with this one. This is a really old one, and it's called Remember. And it's funny how I've been doing this for 50 years, I realized, shockingly. But time passes really fast. And I was asked to write this poem. Somebody asked me for something. It's like, well, what would you say to a young Native poet? Well, I was a young Native poet myself. I'd probably just been writing a few years. And I wrote this poem. And I realized, too, that often these poems come to me because I need them. They're teaching me something. And that's why I love going to poetry or music or... It's because you go into, it's really a teaching mode, an understanding mode, so that you get out of the way of your mind and you move into that heart space and into that space that's beyond all of us, that holds all of us. In that kind of space, we're all relatives and we're related. We are this earth and we remember that. But I'll leave you with this, remember. Remember the sky you were born under. Know each of the stars' stories. Remember the moon, know who she is. Remember the sun's birth at dawn. That is the strongest point of time. Remember sundown and the giving away tonight. Remember your birth, how your mother struggled to give you form and breath. You are evidence of her life and her mother's and hers. Remember your father. He is your life also. Remember the earth whose skin you are, red earth, black earth, yellow earth, white earth, brown earth. We are earth. Remember the plants, trees, animal life, who all have their stories, their tribes, their families, their histories too. Talk with them. Listen to them. They are alive poems. Remember the wind. Remember her voice. She knows the origin of this universe. Remember you are all people and all people are you. Remember that you are this universe and this universe is you. Remember that all is in motion, is growing as you. Remember that language comes from this. Remember the dance that language is, that life is. Remember. Thank you.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's guest was U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo, whose most recent collection of poetry is An American Sunrise. The recording engineers at the JCCSF are Ben Bernardi, Alex Espalet, Dan Folds, Carly Mari, and Aiden Nelson. David Kwan edits and produces the program, and Tina Pimentuan is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rashanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. I'm Jordan Abel. Thanks for listening.